Mary Andrews, and she's the editor of the book Sanctuary, The Inner Life of Home.
Well, I think we may all be forced back there by circumstances. I mean, look at what happened this morning, for example. Everybody's banking system, everybody's airline, hospitals, all of their systems went down.
Let me just interrupt you for a second because I have to put that in time. We are doing an interview on July 19th, 2024, and everything went down this morning. So you're saying, here we are. I just wanted to help our listeners know, because yes, they're not going to hear this until maybe October or later. So please go on.
Well, by October, this particular instance of CrowdStrike malfunctioning will be over. By tomorrow, it will be over. But it's going to happen again. And so the whole point is that we are going to be disrupted. Now, when my stepson was in eighth grade, I said to him, Adrian, what do you think your future is going to be like? And he looked at me and he said, well, I'm going to live on a farm somewhere. I'm going to plant a lot of potatoes. And I'm worried that I'm going to have to fight off the marauders with my backhoe. Mm. And I reminded him of this recently. He said, I must have been joking. I said, I don't think you were. I think you spoke with a wisdom that only somebody in their early teens or about to be a teenager and come into this world and have to deal with a lot of crazy stuff can access. And I think we're in for it. I think everything is going to be shaken up. And I think a lot of us are going to go back to farming, not because it's a nice thing to do and it's bucolic, but because it's heavy shit and we have to do it because we want to survive. So we have no idea what the future is going to bring. I don't think it is Elon Musk's vision of the future. I don't think it is Ray Kurzweil's. If he wants to go ahead and merge with the singularity, more power to him. I hope he has a wonderful wet dream, but it is not for the rest of us. And so the question is, what is the future going to look like? We have no idea, and we have to prepare ourselves to find our home within ourselves and carry it on our back like snails.
To know that we are dependent on one another. We cannot survive in isolation. It's impossible. The earth requires us to do this together, to join. And maybe it might be small tribes or small neighborhoods or whatever.
Interestingly enough, when you think about the evolution of community, a friend of mine who's a Jungian dream worker said to me the other day, she said, you know, we have a maximum number in the local tribe. And it's, I think she said, it's something about 35 or 40 people that we can relate to in that tight-knit community sort of way. And once you start getting into the internet where people have 3,000, 4,000, 100,000 friends and 90 gazillion likes, hello, where is community? Where is connection? And worse, where is the imagination? Because when you reduce everything, I mean, it's now more than 140 characters. You actually get maybe 280 now on social media. But where is that internal experience? I'm thinking a lot about handwriting and how if you have Parkinson's or a degenerative disease, your handwriting deteriorates and it's directly related to the strength in your body. Well, here we are. We have generations that can't write. What are we losing by not being able to write anymore, by not being able to write cursive, by not being able to take notes, by not being able to do math without a calculator? I mean, all of these things are talents and gifts that have a home within the human body. And if we de-home them and we defenestrate them, what is left in terms of our attributes and capabilities?
Exactly, exactly. Valerie, at this time, there are a lot of us that are saying, I want to age at home. I want to, in fact, I want to die at home. And so there are a lot of us that are doing a lot of caretaking. I'd like to talk about that part of home that is we're caretaking one another. And even there's a whole place, because we've been so separated from our families, and we used to live close to our aunts and uncles and our parents and our grandparents and all of that. Now we're very separated. So as friends, we are finding ourselves being caretakers of one another. And that it's true that in this caretaking, we're finding aging at home a real challenge. So let's talk about that. What do you know, and what do your essays and people who have written about this tell you?
Oh, well, I rely on my great friend Peggy Flynn, who has an organization called In the Evening of Life, and I highly recommend her work. She has spent years studying aging and dying at home, and trying to alert the city of San Francisco to the fact that they have a rapidly aging population that they have not planned for. And she is now in Milwaukee in the Midwest, and she specializes in doing spiritual guidance for the aging, because this is a time when you come to terms with, you know, where have you made your home on this earth, and what home are you going to? I mean, it's not just swing low, sweet chariot. I mean, this is a big transition, and we are going from home to home. One of the interesting things that came up in conversation the other day was the fact that we used to have dying rooms at home. And I lived in a 1790 stone farmhouse that belonged to my ancestors. I didn't know it. I moved into it. The house was calling me back to it. And one of the things that fascinated me was the front room was always reserved for the sick, the invalid, for the dying. The person was laid out, a long trestle table in the dining room. The wake was held at home, and the front door had to be big enough to get the casket in and out. So there was a lot of community. There was a family. There were always, you know, talk about woman power. What did we do? We were the caregivers. We were the ones. And because women did not work in the traditional sense and, you know, go out and found circuses and run companies, they were stuck with this duty. And so part of it was dealing with dirt and blood and unpleasant situations. And part of it was being sensitive. Virginia Woolf's mother was a consummate caregiver, Julia Stevens. She worked herself to death as a caregiver. She thought of herself as a social worker before her time. And she has a wonderful book, an essay called On Being Ill, where she talks about how you have to make sure that the candle is not reflected at a harsh angle in the mirror so it disturbs the patient, and how you need to put certain kinds of compresses on the head, and how you have to organize the household so there are no sharp noises. So she was an expert at this. And Virginia wrote her own essay in this same book about how she loved being sick because it was the only time her mother paid attention to her. So it's a fascinating essay, but women have been the at-home caregivers forever. And now what I'm discovering in my women's group and amongst my women friends is that we're all asking each other, what do you want? How do you want to live the last few years? Now, Peggy says that what you have to realize is home is the last stage set. And if you are smart, you will tell people what you want, what you don't want. One woman who was one of her clients was a very extroverted woman. She was a designer. She went out and bought the most fabulous sofa that had a high back that could hide all of her oxygen equipment, because she didn't want people to see her on a tank, and she didn't want people to see her suffering. But she would lay herself out on this couch and receive people and have these wonderful conversations, and people would go, and then she would have like a 5-hour nap. But she orchestrated this living room to be her bedroom, her receiving room, her everything room. And one of the things Peggy talks about that I think is really important is when you are caring for one another, you have to think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You have to think about, you know, is the kitchen accessible? Are the smells in the household what the person is used to? Very often you'll get a caregiver from another culture who makes a different kind of food, and it disorients the person they're caring for because they don't recognize the smell. So it's important to weigh in on all the five senses. What do you like to touch? What do you have like to have next to your skin? What do you like to see? What kind of music do you want to listen to? Peggy spent several months DJing Handel for a guy who was in love with classical music, and visitors would come in and say, I can't stand that. Put on something pop and something easy. And she would say, no way. This is his music. It's his time, and he gets what he wants. Other people would come in and they would put things away. And this one gentleman she was working with was absolutely confused. He said, Peggy, I think I'm losing it. She said, you're not losing it. You're one of the sanest people I know. And he said, well, I can't find anything anymore. Look, that cup is not where I keep it. And this cereal isn't where I put it. And my towels aren't where I put them. Well, all these people came in to do good. You know, the do-gooders came right in, they did good, and they did a really great job of confusing him because they put things back where they would put things back. And Peggy's most important sentence in our interview was, aging is not the caregiver's heroic journey. It is the person's heroic journey. You cannot steal that from them.
Exactly. I'm reminded, as you're talking, I'm reminded one of my circle sisters is aging. And in my circle, we have told each other, here's what I want. She became very, very famous. And some of her embroidery exists in museums at MoMA, Modern Art Museum in New York. And she was one of the first ones that made the 1960s embroidery all really important and really festive and everything. So she has made and embroidered at her own funeral shroud filled with her own embroidery. And that made me tell my group that I too have one that I made from a pattern that sister has made. I made my own shroud and I said, here it is in my closet. And I took a picture of it. And even though I expect to be cremated, there might be a moment of laid out before cremation that I will have a shroud, and we're going to do that for each other. So here, you know, it's important to think about this ahead of time and to tell each other and not be afraid.
Well, you're bringing back the whole notion of the quilt and how a woman would tell her life story in the quilt. Women who came out to the Midwest and the West from the East Coast often had only a few things from home, you know, a pewter mug, a plate, a bowl, and a quilt that their best friends and their beloveds had made for them. And what I love about this idea of the shroud is that you get to tell your story in this piece. This is the story of your life in this piece of fabric. And this is what quilts originally were.
Exactly. I'm here with Valerie Andrews, and she is the editor of Sanctuary, The Inner Life of Home. If you want to know more about her work, go to valerieandrews.org, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. Andrews, and she's the editor of the book Sanctuary, The Inner Life of Home. And you're in the middle of another move. And I'm just thinking about all of us who have collected so much stuff. And I'm thinking of the scores and scores of people who pay money every month for storage lockers filled with stuff. And so I want to talk about our stuff. And what do you have to say? I know that there are people who have written about this. I remember there was one particular, I think it was Gilda France, who wrote something about stuff. She tells just a marvelous story of the stuff and what she did. So share with us what you know about our stuff and what we can do about it.
Well, you mentioned Gilda France, who was a Jungian analyst in Los Angeles. She started out actually as a film star and became a Jungian analyst and had a marvelous, sparkling personality. I wish I had gotten to know her. But her story is of accumulating things. When people in the family died, she ended up holding their things. So it was almost like her house became a little bit of a mortuary of stuff. And because she felt connection to these people and obligations to these people, she couldn't get rid of it. And finally, somebody in the family had married this guy, Miguel, who had studied with a shaman. And he said, "No problem, I can help you." And he came over and she heard him talking to her things, saying, "You've got to let Gilda go. You've got to let go of her so she can move on with her life now. She's been your faithful steward for a long time." So I am a firm believer in talking to your things, in having rituals, and saying goodbye to things. People say to me, "Don't sort through your stuff. Just pack it up and take it all to the next place." I am physically incapable of doing that. For me, moving is a rite of passage, and it's an act of life renewal to go through and jettison things, to say goodbye to things, to find new homes for things. I'm a firm believer in Craigslist. I have to find homes that are right for things. I remember moving once. I found this young couple who wanted my dresser for their baby's room. A Tibetan monk came and he bought a Chinese rug. I said, "What are you doing buying a Chinese rug?" He says, "It's okay, I forgive." I mean, the most amazing things happen when you pass on your things in a conscious way. And the same thing happens when I'm going through my office and packing up my office. I look at these past projects. I find books I haven't finished, find articles that still need to be done. And it is my obligation to the physical world to understand and rank them and put them in the order in which they should be opened. Box number 1, 2, 3, 4, project 1, 2, 3, 4. And so one of the graces about moving so often is that every time I move, it is this act of life renewal and life review. Life review. So if you put all your stuff in a storage room, you're depriving yourself of life review and of a really important psychological process. And then that psychological process, as Gilda writes about, just stacks up and up and up and up and up until it's too big and you can't face it. So I am not a Marie Kondo follower. I would never say every house should only have 30 books. And I also believe that things tell us when they want to leave if we just listen. And I don't believe, like a lot of Marie Kondo followers, that it's okay to put everything in plastic bags out by the garbage. I think things need to be recycled and have a second life. I started sharing things with my women's group when I lived in San Rafael many years ago. I said, "Look, let's just meet every few months." And everybody makes a bad purchase. Everybody thinks they look great in that color and they don't. And it just sits there in the office. And you bought it because it was quality and you knew it had something special about it and you really loved it, but it just isn't for you. Well, maybe you bought it for somebody else. So bring it over and let's have a giveaway. So my living room would be covered with shawls and vases and paintings and things that people had loved but were ready to pass on. And everybody went home happy with a truckload full of stuff. And then a year later, they could change it all up again. So I think we have an obligation to things. And I do think that they tell us, when they are ready to go.
Just last night, I ended up for some reason cleaning out this cupboard that's next to my sink. of all the pots and pans, and I pulled them all out last night for some reason, and I stacked them up, and I thought, you know, I don't need these, all of these pots and pans. I'm not using them anymore. And some of them are very, very fine, you know, pots. I mean, really well made. And so today or this weekend, I'm going to take them out and put them in, say, these are giveaways in my local, where I live, apartment complex, and see if anybody just picks them up. And because I'd like to pass them on. So that just happened just last night, just to take you up on your suggestion. Stuff has energy. And I think that some of the essays I read, if you notice them and you notice what's continuing to give you energy and then to actually give it energy back. I think Jung talked to his stuff. He said, when you neglect something, it's gonna complain.
It will. It will. He called it the tuktus objects. And it translates loosely the malice of objects, because when you mistreat something, it will hide from you. It will trip you. I had a friend who was not very organized, and a scarf and it's a book she had left on the stairs kept tripping her. And I said, well, why do you leave them in a place where they can be kicked? And so she said, that conversation inspired her to put them away. And she now has a much better relationship with things. So there's a spirituality here, too. It's not just about cleaning up and having everything minimalistic and neat and tidy. I firmly believe that a house goes through cycles, and that I use my office as an example. When I'm in the midst of a project, there are papers everywhere. When I'm finished with the project, I take up the papers. I take up all the beach rocks that hold them in their place in case the wind comes along. I put everything away. I have a clean sense, and then I start again. So it's not about minimalism, and it's not about clutter. It's about this organic flow that we have with things, and it's about letting things flow into our lives and letting things flow out of our lives.
Exactly. And I know that one of the central themes of your work is about how home is a laboratory for understanding ourselves. I mean, that's what we've been talking about all hour, right? Is that knowing deeply what is home for us and understanding ourselves.
Well, I'd like to go to Bayo Okomolafe, who is one of my favorite writers. He's head of the Emergence Network at Berkeley. He's a beautiful writer, and he has a piece in this book about his experience. He was born in Nigeria. His father was a diplomat. He was posted in Zaire, and his whole family lost everything, and they were held at gunpoint by child soldiers. They did not know if they were going to survive. And it's about this experience of losing everything. His book is called These Wilds Beyond Our Fences. And he has written a letter to his daughter about our search for home in a postmodern world where anything can happen at any time and you can lose everything overnight. And he talks about building mountains. And when he talks about mountains, he talks about them in the same way Mary Reynolds Thompson talks about mountains, that you have a mountain inside you. You have a mountain of strength. And this is where your sense of place begins. And how do you learn to carry that with you wherever you go? I mean, Bayo has lived in Nigeria, Zaire, Chennai, India, now Berkeley. But he is a poet of the soul of home in a world that is rife with refugees and civil war and torment. And he talks about the importance of carrying it with you wherever you go.
Well, there you go. I mean, and we often think, I hope that we think about today, I'm not being bombed. My home today, where I live, it's not being destroyed by fire today. It's not being taken up by a tornado. So that gratefulness and to be aware of all of those who are under that kind of threat. whether it's climate or war or whatever it is, and to be aware of that and to be sensitive and appreciative and send prayers.
One of the most moving things I experienced in my writing group on home was the day we all listened to an 8-year-old girl in the Ukraine singing the Disney song Frozen from a bomb shelter. And she had this clear voice, clear as a bell, and it brought everybody home. Though they were in a bomb shelter, this child singing brought them all together. And that was, for that moment, their concept of home.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, Valerie, we could talk on and on. We have so much to say about this subject. And I so appreciate that you are immersed in it. And then you share that out with us in so many ways, in the digital magazine, in your books, in your writings. Thank you so much. I've been speaking with Valerie Andrews, and she is the editor of Sanctuary, The Inner Life of Home. She also has a digital magazine, Reinventing Home, Culture, Creativity, and Character. And to know more about her work, go to valerieandrews.org. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3824.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over 4 decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hello, I'm Sunny Strasberg, author of The Theridelic Approach. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about preparation, perspectives, and best practices for psychedelic therapy.
Communication is everywhere, but what is it? Communication is how you share your thoughts, your opinions, your culture, from what you see on TV to what you post online. But what about the people who are not being seen or heard? AMI is a media company that strives to be a voice for Canadians with disabilities, whether it's through positive portrayal, reflection, and accessible media. AMI believes everyone should be included, and that includes you. AMI is inclusion. Experience AMI at amiplus.ca.
Diverse, independent, yours. You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia.